Okay, welcome back. Time to spend a little discussion with Father Paul Kramer about the future, the imminent and immediate future of the Catholic Church, which isn't looking very good at the moment. I'm still expecting, hoping that somebody will essentially declare a war, a religious war against the frauds who have taken control of the Vatican. Something like that is going to have to happen. A formal declaration of war against the fraudulent Vatican and its pagan religion agenda, and worse. And it's not good. I'm going to repeat what I mentioned last hour. New York's mayor, Mamdani, right? The Islamist who believes in all the things that Muslims do, such as female genital mutilation, such as honor killings, such as killing every human being who is not a member of Islam. Got it? Any non-Muslim should be killed. Now, New York Mayor Mamdani went to Friday prayers, and they'll probably put in speakers all over New York City, five times a day, the call to prayer. You watch. He went to Friday prayers at a mosque where the imam, the big shot, literally stood up apparently and called for the killing of all infidels. This is not new, but hearing it here in the U.S., maybe some of you will become more aware of the danger you're in. Anyone who is a non-Muslim in the U.S. should be killed. That's Mayor Mamdani. That's Islam. Isn't that nice? At any rate, hello, Father Kramer. Welcome back, my friend. Always good to talk with you.
Yes, great to be back. And unfortunately, here in the European Union, we have such an invasion of Muslims who are mostly young men of military age. They're not refugees. They are invaders.
Oh, I hear it. I hear you. Same thing over here with our Latin Americans. A lot of military age people. Yes, go ahead.
And in Catholic prophecy, and we know from the message of Fatima, there's going to be a world war. But what is often forgotten, that in the prophecies of the saints, for example, the Blessed Virgin Mary to Sister Elena Aiello, she's beatified by Pope Benedict XVI. She spoke of an Islamic war, a jihad that will be waged in Europe, and it will take place either simultaneously or just before the Russians invade. Russia is going to invade. And Western propaganda, of course, tries to make the Russians look like Nazi Germany, like Hitler wanting to invade and conquer the world.
Yeah.
But it's quite the opposite. Russia is being provoked. The West has...
I've never seen anything
the
like
Western
it.
Alley.
I agree.
The United States and its NATO allies are trying to bring about the end of Russia. They're trying to destroy Russia as a country and replace it with a collection of little client states that will be subservient to the Western financial powers.
Right. A collection of provinces, if you will. Hey, I have another question real quick. Britain is now launching, whether they agree to it or not, they're sending drones, if you want to be strict, to Ukraine. But they are overseeing the launch of a lot of these things. They're giving them to the Ukrainians. They are directly involved with fighting a war against Russia. So is the formerly United States of America, giving them all kinds of technology. I don't know what else it's going to take for Russia to react in terms of what is actually going on, which is an overt NATO and American attack on Russia. How much more can Putin take? Or is he under the thumb of the Zionist Jewish oligarchs there who don't want any more trouble for their kind? I don't know what's going on, but it's crazy. I can tell you that.
The oligarchs could only exert so much power. But the man in charge of the country who has the commanding authority over the armed forces is the President Vladimir Putin. So he's a patriot. He loves his country. He seeks the best interest of what is geographically the largest country in the world. What is militarily with its nuclear weapons, the most powerful military country in the world. And with its military alliance, is certainly the most powerful military force in the world. So he's the man with the gun in his hand. The oligarchs have money in their hands, but you can't shoot a coin. You can shoot a bullet.
Right.
So ultimately the power lies with the government under Putin. So when push comes to shove, he's going to say no more of this.
When? 4 years plus now. And he still has not been able to, with arguably the best military in the world, get all of the Ukrainians out of the Donbass. Still, there are many Ukrainians living in the Donbass, controlling towns, villages, some cities. He can't get them out yet. This has been a terrible World War I. It's worse than World War I. Trench warfare, epic. I just don't understand it. So the question would be, Father Kramer, and you're not a military analyst, but when is Putin going to get the green light to say, okay, enough is enough, and then issue an ultimatum, for example, to Zelensky, another Jew, just like the Jewish oligarchs in Russia, to tell Zelensky, you got 36 hours or whatever to empty Kiev, Kharkov, and Odessa. For example, of all the people, you have to give them 48 hours, whatever. And then we're coming in, we're going to level it. And that's the end of the war. That's the end of the war. Nothing is being done that's going to end this war any sooner than some kind of a long attrition. It's 4 years plus already of the Ukrainian forces, which are made up of almost entirely white Christian men and women. This is a Holocaust on Christians. No one wants to talk about that either. Go ahead, please.
Putin is not like Trump. I think we all know that. But
yes.
It has to be pointed out in one specific regard. Putin's not going to act alone. He's waiting for things to happen before he decides it is the opportune moment. The opportune moment to
4 years? Father Kramer, we've given him enough time, haven't we? 4 years? I think time's passed. If he were a president over here, there would be a hell of a movement to get him removed from office. I would hope. 4 years.
Well, it's a different system. It's a different way of thinking they have in Russia. And
Yeah.
Remember... Yeah. A couple of years ago, not long ago, a couple of years ago, Putin made his response when he said he was making his pivot to the Middle East. Remember that?
Yeah.
And that was when he hooked up more closely with Iran. What this means is that basically he's waiting for the Islamic countries to make their move. And the man who is going to provoke the Islamic countries to make their move is Donald Trump. Or possibly Netanyahu, but I think it's Trump. The way Trump is so obsessed with the idea of using nuclear weapons now. He wants to use nuclear weapons. he wants to use the nuclear weapon on Iran, like that's just going to end the whole problem. That we have a bigger gun than them. We're going to clobber them, and that's going to be the end of the Islamic Republic.
Yeah, well, you know they've rewritten the basic rules of engagement regarding tactical nukes, but I don't think they put a cap on anything. They just have rewritten the rules of engagement to allow nuclear weapons now. That's the word we get in the media.
I think Trump, I think he's much too simple-minded to understand what will be the negative repercussions.
Yes, sir.
If a nuclear weapon is used, the United States will become a pariah immediately throughout the whole world. The United States is going to face sanctions, crippling sanctions.
I know you think. I'm just being objective here. I wonder if the United States is first to use a nuke against Iran, it'll be because the Jewish state ordered it. They want the U.S. to carry that onus and not the Jewish state, but it'll be the Jews who are behind it. And I'm wondering if one looks at the use of a tactical nuclear weapon, three or four or five of them, whatever, and it does actually create a break in the Iranian will, which I don't believe it will. What does that mean for the rest of the planet? What does it mean for Kim Jong-un? What does it mean for Xi Jinping? What does it mean for other countries who have nukes that don't talk about them? That once that door is opened, again, 1945, I don't think there's any stopping it. I don't think we're going to become a pariah. I don't think the world has the moral integrity to do it. But that's just me. But your point is a good one. It could happen.
There's also a much greater danger, something more palpably feasible that could take place. Now, I remember when a Turkish sociologist, way back in around the early 80s, I think it was, late 70s, early 80s, after the revolution in Iran, he spoke of Turkey being the most liberal, westernized, democratic country in all the Islamic world. But if our clerics go up into their minarets and proclaim jihad, just to a man, we will all wage jihad. We will drop what we are doing and wage jihad. Now, the Iranians are Shiites, and this puts something of an inferiority complex on the ones who consider themselves vastly superior. The Sunnis are considered the orthodox Muslims. The Shiites are generally considered to be the heretics. But who is taking the side of defending the Palestinians? It's the heretics. It's the Shiites. And that is something that will cause the motivate the Sunni countries not to be outdone by these heretics, that they will want to defend against the aggression of the Jewish state, the genocide of the Jewish state. And beyond that, if a nuclear weapon is used on Iran, then the ball will be in their court, the Sunni countries, that the in the name of Islam, an Islamic country has been nuked, and what will the Sunnis do?
Right. I don't know.
They will unite. They will all unite. This will provoke the jihad. There will be a jihad. has been prophesied by Catholic saints, no doubt about it, and they will wage a jihad in Europe and in other parts of the world too. And when that takes place, that's when the Russians will make their move.
I'm like most everyone. I'm waiting and watching. I'm still appalled that 4 years have passed and how many young Russian men and women have died? 150,000? 200,000? How many Ukrainian Christian men and women have been sacrificed by the Zionist Jew trisexual pig who's ordering them to go and die? How many? 1 million plus now. And yet the world does nothing. The world does nothing about anything. So, I don't know. It's all very discouraging. Very disgusting. It just boggles the mind. Trump is useless. Putin should go in there and give an ultimatum and end this thing. Unless the idea is to keep fighting it so they can use it as a battlefield laboratory for any kind of new weapon system that somebody wants to go to Putin and ask if we can try it out on real people. We know Zelensky has actually advertised that very opportunity to the world. You have a new weapon system? You want to test it here in Ukraine? Contact us immediately. So, yeah, that, I don't know. That's part of it. But 4 years? Nah, doesn't make sense. Not at all. And we know that the opposition against Putin is NATO. It's Russia being attacked by NATO and European countries. Britain, you name it. Doesn't matter. They're almost all involved. And I don't, and now this talk about they are going to attack and try and take Kaliningrad. That will start a nuclear war if they try that. And Belarus is another one. Belarus has nukes. And the president of Belarus has been given the green light by Putin to use them at his own volition, or of his own volition, whenever he wants to. So we're really on the edge here of a lot of crazy things that could literally explode any time.
Another consideration, of course, is the Russian mentality. If you look at the intelligence agencies, the KGB, and above all the GRU, they don't like to take chances. They always want a sure thing. How many times the KGB had an operation planned, and they canceled it at the last moment because there was some. Something happened that made it doubtful that they could pull it off perfectly. Maybe they could pull it off anyways, but they always err on the side of caution. They always do that. Now, what are they waiting for now? Well, they're waiting for chaos. They're waiting for a financial economic collapse. They're waiting for an Islamic jihad to be waged. They want chaos. They want Europe falling apart before they invade.
Well, they're pretty darn close, aren't they? I don't think why would Russia want to invade Europe? They'd stand off and they'd use their Oreshnik brilliant Oreshnik missiles, all of their other missiles. They would take out key NATO and European capitals, businesses, manufacturing and defense centers. Why would they want to invade Europe and waste another several hundred thousand human lives, their own, and then end up with having to babysit it? They'd have to control and dominate and maintain what they have captured. They don't want that. I don't think.
They want to finish the job. They want to finish the job. They don't. They don't want to end up like Trump, using his air power against Iran, and the regime is still there. When Russia invades, when Russia wages war, and Putin has come out and said it, in fact, that there's going to be nothing left in Europe. There's going to be nothing left to save. Those are his words. So he's going to come down with the sledgehammer on Europe.
He has no choice. Europe is blatantly waging war against him and the Russian people. Blatantly.
Exactly. Exactly. He's been very patient, but when that patience comes to an end, Russia is going to hit hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope. I'm people at this point, I think, are so tired of the nonstop stories of death, dying, destruction. They would welcome something major that would end it. And I don't think they would rule anything out. So I don't see the American mythos being cast into the role of some horrible monster. I don't see it. I just think people will accept it for the most part. Once it's done, it's done. And I don't know where else this can go. We have to go. We're going to end up with a nuke being used. I don't see how any other reality makes sense.
A nuke,
you know,
will
what
be
I mean?
Used.
Yeah.
A nuke is going to be used. It's going to be used on Iran.
Well, we may end up having the Jews false flag one here and blame Iran. We know that. Look what they did with 9/11.
Oh, the
false flag experts, they know.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I wanted to say. If you want somebody who's good at doing false flags, they're the ones who do it. Remember the USS Liberty. The American ship that was attacked, ostensibly trying to make it look like it was attacked by the Egyptians. It was the Israelis who attacked that ship.
Of course. Well, let's go to 9/11. It was all a Mossad operation. Most everyone knows it. No secret.
Well, there were five Mossad operatives, Israelis.
The dancing Israelis.
The dancing Israelis, that's right. They filmed it. They knew in advance that this attack was going to happen. They had their cameras set up. The cameras were rolling at the right moment so they could capture the whole thing on film. And they went on Israeli TV and they admitted it. They openly confessed to what they had done, that they were there to film it.
They were hailed as national heroes, just like the Israeli soldiers, male soldiers, who are raping male Palestinians right alongside their female Israeli military counterparts who are cheering them on. This is a sick, sick country. Number one LGBTQ destination probably in the world, Tel Aviv. And pedophilia is probably right there. It's said to be the most depraved city in the world by more than a few people. I haven't been there. I can't tell you. I'm just reporting what I hear. It's awful.
Well, I don't know if you're going to see much if you go there just as a tourist. When I was in Tel Aviv...
Well, you'll see what they want you to see. You know that.
That's right. You've been there. I saw what they wanted me to see.
Yeah. Yep. Look, we're in a mess. President Trump is a Zionist chump, a stooge. He only does what he's told, make no mistake about it. And Jerry Kushner, his son-in-law, and his Jewish daughter, Ivanka, and his Jewish grandchildren, make no mistakes. Trump is not an America First president. Sorry. He's not. And look at the results. Wow. crazy. Well, let's go back to the Catholic Church. I'll ask you again and forgive me. Are you seeing, are you hearing any rumblings of a massive declaration of war on the Vatican by the true faithful in the Church? And I'm not a Catholic, I'm just asking. It has to happen. You can't do this. You're outnumbered. You, the ones who see the truth, are outnumbered in money, people, lies. I don't know how you've got to declare, not you. You, somebody has to declare war against the Bergoglians.
The ones
that includes,
who are
that,
already...
That includes, yeah, go ahead.
The ones who are already declaring war on the Bergoglians are not being heard by the ones who should be listening, because they have been so brainwashed, they've been so propagandized, that as soon as they hear us, they say, "Oh, these people are schismatic. They're against the Pope. They deny the Pope. No, they say we have to recognize this man as the Pope, but we have to resist the evil that he's doing." They don't seem to understand that what the position they represent is not the teaching of the Church. If a man is seemingly the Pope, but he speaks and acts in such a way that manifests that he's a heretic,
right,
then what these people have been told is wrong. They're saying, "Well, you have no authority to make a judgment. You can't judge. If you don't have absolute proof that the man is the heretic, if he doesn't come out and say there is no divine Trinity, the Mass is a medieval invention or something like this." Something so blatantly heretical that any Catholic who learned 25% of the basic catechism is going to know that this man's a heretic. That anything short of that, they're going to say, "Well, you have no right to make a judgment." That's false. That is false. They say only those who have the authority to make a judgment. But against who has the authority to judge the Pope? No one. There's only
I do.
The church's teaching is this. The church's teaching is this. That if you have a true and valid Pope, one who is not a heretic, one who is undoubtedly a Catholic, then he has the full absolute authority of the as a vicar of Christ on earth. He has the supreme jurisdiction, which is a total fullness of supreme power. But if the Pope is acting in such a way, speaking in such a way that would categorize him, qualify him as a suspect of heresy, he's suspected to be a heretic, then already he becomes a doubtful Pope. And
use that term, and it's very elegant in a way, from a literary standpoint. It's correct. He is a doubtful Pope. I like that. It's a very good statement.
Well, this is the very clear teaching on the papacy by the man who is held up by the Church's magisterium as the number one authority on explaining the Church's teaching about the papacy. That's Saint Robert Bellarmine. St. Robert Bellarmine explains, and not just Bellarmine alone, but along with what has become the unanimous teaching of theologians in the late 19th century,
right,
after the First Vatican Council, that if a pope is a heretic, then he is not a true pope. He's a false pope. He's a false pope. He's a counterfeit.
Got it.
If the man is suspected to be a heretic, and it's not just some idle suspicion, but if there is evidence, which are what in law are called the indicia of crime, the indicia of heresy. if there are the words and actions that constitute the indicia of heresy, then the man is to be categorized, to be qualified to what degree of suspicion. If he is strongly suspected, as in vehemently suspected or violently suspected of heresy, then he is clearly a doubtful pope. At best, if he's violently suspect of heresy, then he's almost, we say, morally certain. There's enough evidence to convict him of heresy, and therefore, for all intents and purposes, he's to be regarded as a false pope. And even if it's a vehement suspicion of heresy, he's a doubtful pope. And if he's engaged in actions and words that are tending to destroy the church, then Catholics have no obligation to obey such a pope.
Right.
And this is unanimously taught by the approved commentators on canon law. And according to canon law itself, that where you have the doctors of law all in agreement, in a consensus on a particular point, that interpretation of a law is to be followed. So what it means is this, that if a man qualifies as a suspect of heresy on the basis of the objective evidence that demonstrates beyond any doubt that the man is at least to be held in suspicion of heresy, then the Catholics do not have any obligation to be subject to him. They can withdraw submission. They don't have to obey him. They don't have to recognize him as pope. They hold him in suspicion. And that is the church's teaching. It's not what the Bergoglians and the Prevostians are saying now. They're saying now, you have no right to judge. He's the pope. Who are you to judge? Well, the church has answered that question. If anyone has that, anyone who's capable of examining evidence, anyone who's capable of seeing the evidence, can see plainly, according to the teaching of the church, what constitutes suspicion of heresy, then, if those facts and circumstances are such that they indicate that the person is a suspect of heresy, then, in conscience, the Catholic has a right to withdraw submission and not recognize that man as pope, but to hold him in doubt as a doubtful pope. Once Catholics do this, then they have the freedom to act as if there is no pope. And that is what has been done just a few weeks ago when traditional Catholic bishops were consecrated by the Society of St. Pius X, founded by the late Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre. The Vatican answered by saying they have gone into schism, they've become schismatic, they are excommunicated, and in fact, they are not schismatic. This is the second time this happened. It happened in 1988 when Archbishop Lefebvre consecrated four bishops. John Paul II rather stupidly came out and said this was a schismatic act. And there were eminent professors of canon law, doctors of canon law, candidates for doctorate of canon law, all writing articles explaining the law of the church, citing all the authoritative documents and the text of the statutes of canon law itself, showing that this is not a systematic act, and if they believed that they did it under necessity, under circumstances that justified under necessity, that they do not incur the automatic penalty of excommunication. Certainly, they have invoked that state of necessity as justifying the consecration of these men as bishops, and since it is clear to anyone who has the Catholic faith that we have a true emergency in the church where a gang of heretics have taken over the Vatican. You have clowns like this Tucho Fernandez who denies the dogma of hell. the dogma of the eternity of hell. He denies it. He says no one. He says the God that he believes in will not condemn anyone to the eternity of hell.
Yeah.
The man's a heretic. Bergoglio said the same thing. And Prevost keeps this man in power. Obviously, he believes the same thing, but he won't come out and say it because he wants to maintain that thin veil that gives him some appearance of being Catholic, some flimsy appearance of being Catholic, just so that those Catholic people who are deceived by these criminals in the Vatican that they won't recognize these heretics for what they are. They are the enemies of the Church. They are the heretics who were a cancer inside the body of the Church, and they have commandeered the infrastructure. They have taken over the Vatican. It is just as it was in the time of the Arian heresy, when St. Athanasius, the doctor of the Church, the great defender of the faith, came out and said, they have the buildings, they have the churches, we have the faith. The only difference now is, I forgot the name of the emperor at the time, but the emperor attempted to install a second pope. There would be co-popes, there would be two popes in the Church, one favoring the Arians and one who is a Catholic. But the Liberius was the Catholic pope, and Felix was the anti-pope. And the Romans drove Felix out, and they drove the Arian out, and they kept the Catholic pope.
Gotcha.
That's the only difference, because now the heretics have taken over the Vatican, and they are the ones who control not just the diocesan apparatus in the various dioceses of the world, but they have the Vatican. Now they own the Vatican. That's the only difference. But otherwise, it is the same thing. And this was foreseen by St. Vincent of Lerins, who spoke about that Arian crisis. Hypothesized in such a way that he was foretelling that this would take place someday, that you would have a more general crisis when not just a large portion, but seemingly when it was seen that the entire Church had fallen to a heresy. Because then what can we do? He said, in such an instance, the only thing we can do is hold to the traditions that have been handed to us, and that we are not going to be deceived by any lying novelty. And that is what the Vatican is offering the Catholic people today, lying novelties, not the apostolic tradition. And those bishops who are speaking about the synodal process, some of them, one German bishop, I mentioned the name in the past, even comes out and says during the synod, we have to ditch this apostolic tradition. We have to get rid of it. It's no longer useful.
Got it.
Because the synodal process is going to determine what is divine revelation from now on. The synodal process. And what is the synodal process? The synodal process is Prevost Leo XIV appoints bishops, like-minded heretics. They preside over conferences and synods. They come up with recommendations, and they send these recommendations to Rome to be rubber-stamped by the heretic-in-chief. And that's the synodal process. And they say, well, the whole church wants a modification of the Church's moral doctrine, of the Church's dogma, and therefore, because it is across the board, the hierarchy the hierarchies all over the world want these changes now, so we have to rubber stamp them. Now, the only problem is this. It doesn't matter if the universal synodal church, the universal the heretical church created by the heretical counter church, the counterfeit church created by Bergoglio, doesn't matter if that false church universally wants these changes to be made. Of course they're going to want these changes to be made. They are rebelling against the apostolic tradition. They're rebelling against the teaching of Christ that we've received from the apostles. They're against that. They have these lying novelties, these new doctrines that essentially allow for sexual diversity, basically a complete nullification of all moral standards, and dogmatic articles of faith. Of course, they will all fall in the name of pluralism, that they want what Freemasonry calls a dogma-free Christianity. And that's what the ecumenism of Vatican II ultimately leads to. That's what it's ultimately intended to lead to. It is a dogma-free Christianity, which, of course, is the creation of Freemasonry. This new synodal church, with its fluid teaching on morality, and with its nebulous teaching on dogma, which basically nullifies all dogma and all moral standards, that is the Masonic creation. That is the Trojan horse of Freemasonry that has taken over the Vatican and masquerades as being Catholic. And the Catholic people are being told, you can't judge against that because they're the pastors of the church, they're the authorities, that only the pastors could judge. But this is when the mafia takes over the courts, when the mafia takes over the government, are we going to say only the mafia can judge? No. We have to be able to, look at them and say, wait a minute, that's not a legitimate government, that's the mafia. And that's what the Vatican is now. It is a Masonic mafia that has taken over the Vatican. And we as Catholics, according to Catholic teaching, we have the right and we have the duty and conscience to resist them. And since they manifest themselves to be, at the very least, gravely suspect of heresy, we may withdraw. Morally, we have the right and, in fact, the duty to withdraw submission and not recognize them as pastors of the church, not recognize that man as pope, not recognize the cardinals and bishops that he's appointing, because they're all a gang of heretics. And I
couldn't agree more. They're awful. And everything I've heard, they're awful people.
We cannot be in communion with heretics. They want to excommunicate us? What can we say? If I can change a quotation of a famous a movie character. I would say to them, if they're going to excommunicate me, I could say, go ahead, make my eternity. A little bit of a change.
Apologies to Clint Eastwood,
I say.
That's good.
Go ahead. That's good. Make my eternity.
No, it's very good. No problem. I still and will always feel that at some point, somebody, some group is going to have to stand up and file, as it were, in the Vatican, or certainly just through the media, a declaration of purpose to retrieve, to recover, and to restore the real Catholic Church and faith. There has to be a formal declaration of war, or this is not going to go anywhere. I just don't see it. Maybe I'm blind. I don't know. I'm telling you how it looks from here, everyone, and I know there are a lot of Catholics listening. But this Bergoglian takeover must be rejected, or the Catholic religion is toast. Done. It'll be just another tentacle of the globalists and their Zionist New World Order. That's what they're after. So I don't know. Does that make sense to you, Father Kramer? Somebody has to stand up and issue a formal, written, documented declaration of absolute refusal to accept what's being done to the church. Somebody has to do that. It has to. It can't just be talked among the few or mentioned on a few radio formats like this one. It's got to be a major declaration and pronouncement. I think, does that work for you? Or is that something that is just not part of the Catholic ethos? You've got a lot of history here. You know, you've worked through things before. So I don't know.
It will happen. It will happen. And it doesn't look today like it's going to happen anytime soon. But it always does happen when you least expect it. Events will take place, and it will provoke this kind of a declaration, and it will happen.
Why don't you do it? Put your name on it. You'll go down in Catholic history. You know the situation, right? The Archbishop, who's been very brave, he's standing up. You have nothing to lose. Think about it. Just a thought. Vigano could do it. You could co-sign it. I don't know. I'm just outside, you know, offering my 2 cents. But I really think now's the time. And if you would put your name on it, you will go down in history.
Maybe it's not the kind of history you want to go down in.
I don't know. Go ahead.
I've pretty much made the declaration myself. You have verbally.
You've done it brilliantly. So transform it into a written document. You're on record already on this program, I know, as having spoken exactly what I'm alluding to here.
We need more than Archbishop Bigelow and myself, just to name the two of us.
I think you could probably find others, retired perhaps, excommunicated even. I mean, there are others who would, I think, jump to stand with you. Just my observation again. I'm not in the church. Just a thought.
But what we need is organizationally that the entire apparatus of church operation will be put together so that we can operate as a Catholic Church again. And as far as those synodalists are concerned, we just shut them out. They're not part of our ecclesial world. They're outside. They're on the outside looking in. As Pope Innocent III said about the heretics, if a pope becomes a heretic, he is outside the church. He is already condemned by God. He is to be cast out and trampled underfoot by men, because the heretics are aliens. What are aliens? They are on the outside looking in. They're not inside the church. They're outside of the church. So we treat them like the excommunicates that they are, because they have excommunicated themselves with the Catholic Church. They say that we are excommunicated. No, they have excommunicated themselves by publicly embracing heresy, promoting heresy shamelessly. So we have to treat them they are, for what they are, and they are heretics. No. We ignore them. We get on with our life. We get on with the life of the church, with the work of the church, the ministry of the church, and we ignore them. That's what the church teaches that we. That's what the church teaches we must do.
Let's turn the other cheek. I get it. I get it. But I don't. Look, I'll sign it. I mean, I'll be happy to add my name to it. I just think a formal declaration of the things you have already made abundantly clear with your outstanding and eloquent diction, your choice of words, your expressions, your analyses. You've got it. You've done it. So it's already been done. I don't see any harm in putting it in writing. I don't. But anyway, we have to go, Father Kramer. We'll talk again in a couple of weeks. Think about these things. Maybe they'll be, I don't know. It's just, again, I feel like I'm being a little rude almost. I'm outside, but that's how it looks to me. Just my thoughts. So thank you. Very good. Excellent job. And take care of yourself and be safe.
Bye now.
Okay. Father Paul Kramer. Okay, gang. Friday night. We'll be here during the weekend, as always, trying to track this insanity. Thank you for being here all week. And for some of you, I had another email, somebody who has been listening for over 30 years. Wow. Thank you. We'll talk soon. Take care and do be safe out there.